Everybody, how you doing? It is the Rebecca Juro Show on Friday night, special edition. And we have a really special show tonight. The president of the Human Rights Campaign, Chad Griffin, going to be joining us shortly. Very excited. Because let's be honest, this is the first time an HRC president has gone on this show. Not something I would have expected from his predecessor. And before we get to Chad, I had a couple of things I want to say. First, thanks for tuning in. I hope you'll spread the word that if by some chance people are having trouble getting in, they can't get through, keep trying. And of course, the podcast will be up right after the show, just a few minutes after the show ends. So if anybody misses it, please tell people, put it on Facebook if you can. The podcast will be up just a few minutes after the show ends. I want to say a couple of things before we get to Chad. First of all, a lot of people, we know. There's a lot of old wounds, a lot of hard feelings, a lot of mistrust, a lot of that stuff. And we know this. And we share it. It's part of our collective history as a community. And we're not going to shy away from that. Because we can't. It's part of who we are. It's part of the history of this community. However, I would point out that just as we have had in this country historically in the civil rights battles that have taken place over centuries, look at the progress we've made. Seriously, think about this. Look at the progress we've made. Imagine, even 10 years ago, would you be seeing the kind of acceptance, or even 5 years ago, forget about 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, would you be seeing the kind of level of transgender acceptance, LGBT acceptance, gay marriage all over the country, trans rights in so many states? Who would have believed it? Well, so I would ask you, to keep an open mind here, seriously, keep an open mind here, because this is what we do. We evolve. We change. We progress. That's what progressives do. We progress. And so if we can progress, if our culture can progress, if we can move forward and become more inclusive, a more free society, a more accepting society, if we can believe all those things, and I assume that we do because we are activists and because we care, because we are members of this community, shouldn't we also allow, and shouldn't we also even expect that the Human Rights Campaign will evolve too, and will change too, and will become more inclusive? Well, I want to say, I have to say this. I'm impressed. I'm impressed with what I've seen. I'm impressed with the people they've hired. I'm impressed with the rhetoric that I have heard that is so unlike what we used to hear back in the day. I am so impressed with what we see going on, not just with the words, but with what we're seeing in action. I mean, a couple of years ago, would you have ever expected another HRC president to get on the stage of Southern Comfort, much less make the speech that he did? And I want to read just a little bit for those who may not have seen, who may have not have caught this. I'm just going to read a couple of key points, and then we're going to go to the interview. For one thing, Chad Griffin, really, I mean, if you're going to make an apology, wow, this is the way to do it. I'll tell you, it was really quite an apology. He said, for example, I want to cut to the chase right here. I want to cut to the chase here today. There's an elephant in this room, and well, it's me. Some of you may be wondering what I'm doing here. Some of the more skeptical among you, particularly those I don't yet know, may think I'm lost. I promise you I'm not. I'm here for a pretty simple reason. I'm here because I want to be here, and I'll tell you why. And he goes into this story, and I'm not going to read the whole thing because I don't want to take up that much time. But basically, he tells a story, he describes the separation between the trans community and HRC. And he illustrates it through two different events, an HRC gala that was taking place on the second floor of a student center, and a trans event that was taking place on the floor above it. And you could literally see the divide right in front of you. Well, you know what? I'll tell you. One thing that I have come to understand over the last several months, this guy, Chad Griffin, he is not Joe Salmanis, number one. So let's get that out of our heads right now. Salmanis is gone. David Smith is gone. Winnie Stackelberg is gone. All the villains that we used to fight against, all the people we used to talk about back in the day, those people are gone. They're history. They're out of there. Well, not all of them, but you know what? We have to give these folks the opportunity to evolve. And here they are, they're coming to us, and they're saying, you know what, we fucked up, and we know we fucked up, and we're going to do better. I submit to you, we need to let them try. And I'll tell you the truth, I'm hopeful. I like what I'm seeing. They're hiring great people. They're doing stuff that matters. If you haven't read this speech, it's available on the advocate.com site. We posted it earlier today. If you haven't read this yet, I encourage you to do so. There's a lot of good stuff in here. And as you'll hear shortly, there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to work on. But I'm hearing HRC and Chad in the person, HRC in the person of Chad Griffin, say things that I have never heard HRC say before. And I think you're going to hear more of that tonight. So, you know what? Why don't we just get into it? And then when we come back at the end, we will take some calls. All right. So hang on. Here we go. All right, hey everybody, we are back, and I am really excited because for the first time ever, we have on the show the president of the Human Rights Campaign, Chad Griffin, who has just given a speech at Southern Comfort that was really amazing. Chad, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Becky, thank you so much for having me on this show, and thank you so much for your long commitment and dedicated activism and all that you do.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. The first thing I want to ask you about, because I want to get right into this, we have a lot of stuff to cover. I want to ask you about your own perspective on trans issues and HRC's relationship with the trans community. In your speech at Southern Comfort earlier today, you spoke about attending an HRC gala in Ohio and discovering that while HRC's event was taking place on the second floor, there was a separate trans event taking place on the floor above you. And as you said, the divide between HRC and the trans community was literally right there in front of you. Most of the history, though, which created that divide, happened before you took over as the president of the Human Rights Campaign, but now you're the public face of this organization. What do you see as your role in the process of healing old wounds and helping HRC evolve into a truly trans-inclusive and supportive organization?
Well, Becky, you are absolutely right, and I obviously came into this job well aware of the history and well aware of this divide. I've been in this job for about 2 years, and I really wanted the time to be in that building and to work with our staff and to be able to improve our programs and ensure that we are everywhere we can across the board making trans issues a priority and integrated into every single one of our programs. And, you know, although what you saw in the speech that I gave today, I made very clear that I formally apologize for HRC's wrongs with the transgender community in the past, something I was obviously aware of when I came into this job, but something that was very clear to me from the beginning, that we had to close this gap. And the buck stops with me. It is my responsibility. I obviously have an incredible team, phenomenal board members and volunteers who I work with, you know, on a daily basis on all of these important issues. But this is my job because we have so much to do. And for us to have such a divide and for us to have made these mistakes in past. And I made clear that not only am I, you know, apologizing for the things that you mentioned specifically, but I also apologize for the many times that the trans community has been either underrepresented or unrepresented by this organization. It is my responsibility to fix that, and that is exactly what I have been spending time on over these last couple of years, and I intend to continue to make that a priority.
Excellent. Now, but the other thing, I have to ask you this, because I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't. It is common knowledge that you're not the president of the Human Rights Campaign in the same way as, for example, Barack Obama is president of the United States. But HRC's executive board is the entity that actually sets policy for the organization, and you serve at their pleasure. In other words, if the board decides they're not happy with you, they can fire you. And we also know that many of the same people sitting on HRC's executive board today were also there when HRC was still actively advocating for legislation that wasn't inclusive of gender identity and expression protections. I know these board meetings are private, but I'd like you to talk a little bit about, as much as you can, about the evolution of HRC's executive board on these issues, and specifically, why should trans people be confident today that we won't see a repeat of the board's past behavior in regard to trans inclusion and issues? And how can we be sure that one day HRC's executive board won't just vote to go back to treating trans people and issues the way they have historically?
Well, Becky, it's an absolutely a fair question. And I am the president of this board. We do have a board of directors, obviously, who hired me. And I can tell you that this is the view and has the full support of our entire board of directors. When I came into this organization, I made very clear that this was a priority for me and would be a priority for our staff. The board as well made very clear that this was a priority for them. I can tell you that this board was as eager for us to move forward as I have today as I am. I have the full support of the board of directors in the apologies that I made today, as well as the commitment of our staff and our resources and our budget to these issues today and in the future. So I speak with great confidence in not only on my behalf, our entire organization, as well as our board of governors and our board of directors when I say that this apology is sincere and that our commitment today and going forward is unwavering.
Awesome. Okay, that's really great to hear. Now, I also want to talk about what HRC is doing on trans issues now. And, of course, we got to start with the big one, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Now, many organizations, as you know, have withdrawn support for the bill because of the broad religious exemption, which would allow religiously affiliated businesses to fire or refuse to hire based on religious beliefs, even for positions that have nothing to do with the practice of religion, such as janitors and nurses. You announced today that in the next session of Congress, HRC will lead the campaign for a fully inclusive omnibus LGBT anti-discrimination bill that will cover not only employment, but also housing, public accommodations, credit, federal funding, and education. And I've got a couple of questions here. First, does this mean that HRC is completely withdrawing its support for ENDA?
No, it does not. I have made clear that ENDA, including the ENDA that we all together as a community pushed our elected leaders in Congress to move forward, that we got out of the United States Senate, as you know, on a bipartisan vote, all the Democrats and 10 Republicans supporting us. There is no question this bill isn't perfect, but Becky, let me make clear what it is and what it does. And I know you know this, but there has been a lot of confusion out there about what the bill does and doesn't do. Passing ENDA is one of the most important pieces of legislation for the lesbian, gay, and bisexual and transgender community today. There's no question. When we went in to negotiate this bill, in order to get the votes that we needed, we as a community all agreed on two priorities. We cannot leave anyone behind. It must be an inclusive bill. We will support nothing else. The second thing that we all agreed was a priority and was non-negotiable was that private employers could not use religious reasons to discriminate. Now, what you refer to as the religious exemption, there is an exemption that goes further than Title VII that allows religious institutions to discriminate. I wish it wasn't there. It shouldn't be there. But this bill does a lot of good. And if we can get this done and cover the vast majority of LGBT people living all across this country, especially in the places between California and Washington, D.C., places where the need is the greatest, where there are zero protections, we would change thousands, in fact, millions of lives immediately. Our job would not be done, no question. There would need to be improvements, need to be fixes. But in this case, it's my view and it's our organization's view that the perfect cannot be the enemy of the good in this case. I wish the religious exemption wasn't there. It is unnecessary. It shouldn't be there. Unfortunately, in order to get legislation done in Washington, that was something that was required. It was something that was supported by some Democrats and many Republicans. Now, let me say something really important. As we move forward in this next Congress, we really have an ability in the next Congress, and I think it is something that we must do in the next Congress. And I have said, and I said in my speech earlier today, that HRC will lead the campaign for a fully inclusive, comprehensive LGBT civil rights bill. And this is not a bill that just provides employment protections, but it's something that will finally touch all of the aspects of our lives when it comes to protections that we need, from housing to public accommodations to credit to federal funding and to education, something that the entire community needs in order to succeed and to thrive.
Okay, absolutely. Now, but here's the thing. Let's talk about the politics here for a minute. Right now, it seems very unlikely that the Democrats will retake the House during this year's election. And we also know that Speaker Boehner is hostile to LGBT civil rights protections and has thus far been unwilling to allow a vote on ENDA. I'd like you to talk a little bit about what that effort will look like and how HRC plans to confront the political realities of today's Congress. Do you see a path to passage on a bill like this at this time?
Well, look, let me be honest and let me be direct, just as I was earlier today at the speech at Southern Comfort. We're not doing this because it's going to be easy. It will not be. We're not doing this because it's going to happen overnight, because it won't. We're doing it because it's the right thing, and we should, as a community, be asking for and advocating for full and complete protections for our entire community. And if we've got to start somewhere. And so you're absolutely right. Today, we can't get a vote in the House on ENDA just as it relates to employment protections, as you know. Now, having said that, there were folks that said we couldn't get this done in the Senate either. And we were able to count to over 60 in the United States Senate. I will not give up. I will not give up until the last day of this Congress, and we will fight like hell to move every single vote we can. And we are organizing today in more than 30 congressional districts all over this country. We've invested millions of dollars and thousands of volunteer and staff hours all across this country, in fact, as we're on this interview today. Now, as we move into the next Congress, we should not assume that the political landscape is going to change dramatically. That's our job. We as a community have to organize. We have to organize at the grassroots level. We have to work with business at the grassroots level in order to move elected officials, and not just Democrats, but some of those Republicans too, that we can move to our side of this issue, because it's going to take Republicans and Democrats coming together before we can get anything done, the current ENDA or the fully expansive civil rights bill that you and I are talking about today. We are committed to leading that, and we are committed to ensuring that the resources of this organization are devoted to that issue, and of course partnering with the incredible groups all across this country that we will need to be working and marching arm in arm to ever ensure passage.
Okay, great. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about is something I've seen that has really excited me about HRC and has made me extremely hopeful about this whole process is over the last year or so, HRC has been hiring trans people into staff positions. And as you announced today, Hayden Mora, who is a trans man, has been appointed deputy chief of staff. And he's actually a very cool guy who I know. Most of the trans folks that I've talked to are really encouraged by this effort, but they want to see more trans people hired at HRC, and they specifically want to see more diversity in terms of age and racial and ethnic background. And I was wondering what you can tell us about that. Can we expect to see HRC hiring more trans people and putting more of us into management and policy decision-making positions?
Without question, Becky, look, it's something that the job's never done on ensuring that not only within our staff, but in our boards, as well as in our programs. When I talk about the priority and the importance of diversity, if we're not diverse in our people and in our work, then we're not doing our job. We have to be diverse. And I'm glad you mentioned Hayden. You know, Hayden, he is an incredible leader. He was at SEIU for a long time, has been with us for about a year, and has now been elevated to Deputy Chief of Staff. And one of the responsibilities within Hayden's portfolio as Deputy Chief of Staff will be our diversity and inclusion efforts, not only internally in the organization, but also externally when it comes to our programs and our work, as well as our volunteer committees. We can never do enough on this issue. The diversity of the organization in the last couple of years has improved, as you acknowledge, but it's never enough. We have to continue to ensure that every time we have an opening, we have a diverse pool of candidates, and that's how you were able to infuse diversity throughout our building. And I am very proud of the length with which we've been able to go in these last 2 years. We still have a long ways to go. Today, we have 7 openly trans and gender nonconforming staff, and it is progress. It's not enough. We will continue to do more, and I am so glad that Hayden's on our team, as you mentioned.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've met him. He's a great guy. I've met him online anyway. Now, in your speech, you talked about some of the ways HRC is supporting trans people in issues today, and I'd like to ask you about a few of those.
Yep.
For example, one you said that HRC considers working with the community to develop a national response to the epidemic of trans violence to be a core aspect of your work moving forward. Can you tell us a little bit about what we can expect from HRC on that?
Absolutely. Look, it's such, as you know, an important issue. As you and I have spent most of this interview talking about laws and talking about legislation. But as you well know, there is so much more that needs to be done across the movement, across this entire country. There's an incredible disconnect between legal protection and lived experience of trans folks in this country. And we've got to lift up more trans folks, tell their stories, and share their lives and their struggles, because if there's one thing we've learned as a movement, that the more that folks get to know us, the more difficult it is for them to discriminate against us. But The issue that you specifically mentioned there, and what I talked a lot about in the speech today, is anti-trans violence. It is something that we have to call it what it is. It's a national crisis in this country. It too often, they go unsolved, or sometimes even unreported, and we have to make this immediately a priority within the organization, but also as a nation, as we all come together and work together, work with other leaders across the entire movement to develop our response to this crisis. None of us today have all the answers, or we'd all be all over it. It's a complicated issue. It brings in race and employment and poverty and so many other factors. But what we must do, and what we can never, ever accept, is this violence is a given. And together, we've all got to turn the tide, and no one organization is going to do that. We've got to make it a priority, as I announced today, that this organization would make this a core aspect of our work across the board, and that we would work with others, with my colleagues in the movement and so many that were in the room earlier today, to develop a national response to the epidemic of anti-trans violence that plagues this country.
Excellent. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about was you also you mentioned the bathroom meme about trans people. We know that the fear of trans people in bathrooms has hampered political progress on trans rights in states like New York and New Hampshire, which, are states that offer full civil rights to lesbian, gay, and bisexual people, including marriage, but offer no anti-discrimination protections at all to trans people. And we know also that HRC's participation was instrumental in those fights, winning those rights for LGBTs, for LGBs. And you said in your speech, we will tell the truth in regards to trans people in bathrooms. What does that look like? How does HRC plan to address that issue?
Look, it's something I've felt, as you probably know, I came out of a world of political strategy and messaging and communications before I started this job. And I've always felt, if you look at the non-discrimination battles that we fight all across this country, whether it has been historically at the national level with Congress, and increasingly we're seeing successes in our efforts where we've partnered at the state level and also at the municipal level. There's been some great success recently in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and in Houston, Texas. We've also had some setbacks. But if you look and analyze all of those battles, what do the haters come at us with? They come at us with the bathrooms every single time. It's beyond me how they could be so obsessed with bathrooms. You know, historically, it's quite frankly many of the same people that were on the wrong side of history during the civil rights movement. If you look back to the 50s and 60s, what did they use? They also used bathrooms then to scare people. It's outrageous. It's unconscionable. It's a scare tactic, but it's what they do. They come to the table with their scare tactics and their lies, and they try to scare folks who haven't quite come to some decisions on these issues. But what we've got to do, we've got to call them out. We cannot avoid it. And we've got to work on messaging so that we can answer this issue in ways that bring folks to our side. And it's a battle that there is no question our opposition is going to keep bringing to the table. And we've got to defeat them at their own game.
Absolutely. But the thing is this is this in particular is a battle that the trans community has been fighting in a lot of cases unsuccessfully for a long time. Particularly, and I hate to put it this way, but particularly in states where gay marriage has already been won and there's less political incentive for politicians to get behind a transgender rights law. And according to what I've been hearing, a lot of these politicians are using the bathroom thing basically as an excuse for saying, you know what, I'm not going to support this. In reality, because it's politically inconvenient for me, but what I'm going to tell people is that I have a problem with the bathroom thing. And so, obviously, HRC is arguably the most politically influential organization in the country. How do we use HRC's influence and media reach and all those good things to change the narrative about this?
Well, look, it's an issue that I know so many people have been working on for a long time on how to counter that message. Folks like Mara Kiesling at NCTE and other colleagues of mine who have spent literally decades working on this issue. But, Becky, to be totally honest with you, I step back for just a moment every time this issue comes up in a strategy discussion or in a messaging meeting, and I go back to what I said earlier about that divide between, you know, what the lived experience is and what the laws are, and that great gap in between. Because, again, if we've learned one thing in the LGBT movement over the last decades, it's, again, when our neighbors come to know us, when our friends at church come to know us, when our colleagues at work come to know us as human beings, who we are, they know that we're no different than them, and we just want the same rights as them. And once they know us, then they come along. Then they start being with us when it comes to these laws and these protections. And the scare tactics of our opponents start to work less and less and less. And you used an analogy. I'll use another one. It's like the issue of children. You know, for decades it was the messaging of the movement. We all thought, because polling showed us, stay away from the issue of kids. You know, that scare, it feeds into our opponents' hands. But once we figured out how to message the issue and once we figured out how to talk to undecided folks all over this country. You know, most people are fair-minded folks. They want to actually do the right thing. Now, our opponents aren't most people, and they don't want to do the right thing. They want to hurt us all, and they want to defeat us, and they want to keep us down, and they want to defeat these laws. But I find in so many of these states, and quite frankly, even in the halls of Congress, when you can sit down and you can have an honest conversation, and when they get to know trans folks and hear their stories and understand their struggles, then these issues, they fall away, because folks realize that they're nothing but a scare tactic and a lie. So I say that because I don't think we can just focus on how do we message the bathroom issue, how do we talk about it, how do we come at it. That is important, and we have to continue to improve our efforts around that. But at the same time, we have to do what I was saying earlier about lifting up the stories, sharing more stories, the kind of stuff that you do every single day, the kind of thing that I've seen so many times as you've written about and talked about your own story and your own struggle, you know, with employment and job interviews and those types of things. We've got to share those stories more aggressively with more force. And I think that does as much to counter that bathroom, ridiculous bathroom argument that our opponents continually use as our messaging around that issue specifically does. Sorry,
okay.
That was such a long-winded answer, but it's something I and the team have spent a lot of time talking about, thinking about, and prioritizing.
Not a problem. We definitely don't have a problem with long-winded on this show.
Okay, terrific.
Now I know Jeff Crayley, who is HRC's Chief Foundation Officer, is also on the line with us, and I guess this question is for either of you. I understand that HRC has a work program that supports the trans community, and I'd like you to tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, absolutely, and thanks for having me on, Becky. We do several different things in the workplace space. Number one is our Corporate Equality Index, which I think is one of the more well-known projects of the Human Rights Campaign, where we've really moved corporate workplaces rapidly forward in terms of full LGBT-inclusive policies, practices, you name it, related to employment. And we've been there doing trainings and working with many of the Fortune 500 companies to get them to be fully inclusive, adding sexual orientation and gender identity to their employment non-discrimination statements, removing transgender health exclusions from health insurance policies, and many, many other aspects of that work. We've also done some partnership work around the country, working with some local organizations to do some job training activities as well. That's been one of the more, you know, interesting, I guess it's more of a pilot project more than anything, I would say, where we've really gone in, worked with some of these communities and local organizations to really, you know, identify some tangible hands-on things we can do for transgender people who are in need of employment. One of the more successful ones we did was with a group of clergy folks from North Carolina, where we brought them up to D.C. to participate in a legal clinic at the Whitman Walker Clinic here back in D.C. And that was to really help folks, you know, do the identity document changes that are needed through the job search process. I think a lot of people, LGB people and people who aren't transgender, take for granted the fact that our identity documents play such a key role and repeated role in our daily lives. And when you look at something like the job search process and applying for a job, you need your license, you need your birth certificate, you need lots of different forms of identification along the way. And what we did with this partnership was do some legal training to help folks get those legal documents changed so they would have an easier time getting through the door, quite frankly, in some of these job opportunity situations. So that's one example of what we do, but you know, it's really we have a really solid workplace team that does trainings with a wide range of companies and workplaces, college students, really with the goal of lowering barriers for LGBT people to get employment, quite frankly, and to keep their jobs and do well in them.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Jeff. Chad, I know we're running short on time. I know you have to go soon, but I have several listeners who will never forgive me if I don't ask you about Michael Sam, the very first openly gay player to be drafted by the NFL. Now, Sam was drafted and then cut by the Los Angeles Rams, but picked up by the Dallas Cowboys for their practice squad. Now, I'm no great expert on football, but friends who are into it tell me that if Sam hadn't come out, They have no doubt that with his record and skill level, he'd have easily made a first-string squad somewhere. Do you believe that homophobia played a role here?
I'll be totally honest. I don't know the answer to that. I do love that the Dallas Cowboys, that he now has a home. Michael Sam is someone that is a brave, brave hero, in my opinion. You know, you look at Michael Sam, you look at Jason Collins, you look at Brittany Griner. These are folks who are trailblazers. They are standing up, and they are coming out in professions where they are literally on an island, where they are the only one. And so I think that in many ways they are a test to see how folks are going to respond. I think, you know, the things that I've seen Michael Sam say have not indicated this, and I think it would be inappropriate for me to in any way pontificate as to, you know, why that did or happen or might have happened. I would defer to him on it. What I have been so impressed with is his poise and his confidence and his willing to speak up and speak out while constantly saying, I have one job, and that's to be the best damn football player, you know, I can be. And I think we all owe, you know, Michael and Brittany and Jason and so many others, you know, a great deal of gratitude, because they're trailblazers, and they certainly have struggles. Some we'll probably never know about as they come out and you know, achieve success in their careers. But what we do know, they're making life better already today for countless thousands of young people all across this country that now see them as role models, and in some cases perhaps even saving lives, and they'll make it so much easier for those who come behind them. It's an exciting time in sports.
Absolutely. And do you believe, is there a role for the Human Rights Campaign in taking on the issue of homophobia in the NFL and other pro sports?
Well, I think one of the things, you know, that we can do, first of all, and we have consistently done with our, you know, communications and public affairs platform, is always call out, you know, the hate when we see it. That's number one. But number two, elevate those stories. Elevate the stories every single time, whether it's a high school athlete or a professional, you know, athlete comes out of the closet. You know, we've dramatically increased our work in the South, as I know you know, Becky, and including in places like Arkansas, Mississippi, and Alabama that don't have a single protection, even in a city that is yet law. Also, no statewide LGBT organization in any of those states. So we have made places like that a true priority in the Midwest and in the South. And if you look at the South and you look at the importance, you know, of athletes, players, and coaches, it's incredible. Young people growing up look up to those athletes. And so to have not only folks like, you know, Michael and Jason, Brittany, and others coming out of the closet, but having straight allies, having their other players and coaches vocally, verbally stand up and publicly support them, it does a lot of good. And what we can do is amplify those positive stories. And I hope we're entering a place where we have more positive stories to amplify than we have hate to call out.
Excellent. Okay, last question before I let you go. As I'm sure you know, Joan Rivers, who was not only a groundbreaking comedian but also a staunch supporter of LGBT rights and equality, passed away yesterday at the age of 81. Do you have any thoughts that you'd like to share on Joan Rivers?
No, other than, you know, I would just say I know the entire LGBT community and millions of Americans and folks around the world mourn the loss of Joan Rivers. I, you know, had the luck of getting to meet her once in my life, and she's someone that made generations laugh and brought joy to so many of us. But as you also point out, she was someone who had a commitment to activism, particularly LGBT activism, and she did so much good. She showed up at so many places, and she is not a woman who feared speaking up and speaking out. We need more Joan Rivers in this world.
Absolutely. Chad and Jeff, I'd like to thank you so much for doing this, for coming on and talking to us, and I hope we can do it again soon, because I would love to follow and let people know how you're doing on all these things and give us a progress report in the future.
Absolutely. You have my commitment to that, Becky, and as I said earlier today, you know, I'm not asking the trans community to be the first to take this leap of faith. That's my job. That's our job. And it's always been my view that respect isn't given, it's earned, and I just ask that you continue to hold me accountable, hold us accountable. And I look forward to continuing this conversation in the future. And again, I thank you for all that you do for the community.
Well, it's right back at you. Thank you so much for doing this, and we'll talk to you again soon.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. All right. And that was Chad Griffin of the Human Rights Campaign. We will be right back. And we are indeed right back. Hey, okay, we're back. So, all right, here you go. What did you think of that? I'll tell you, I'm impressed. I mean, obviously, I know. I know what you're thinking. It's words. Yes, it is. It's words. And words are good. But words are, by themselves, you know, words don't accomplish goals. Words point us towards goals. Words point out where we need to go. They don't get us there. That's what action is for. And so I want to submit to you action. Let's see what they do now. I don't know about you, but I like what Chad had to say. This is, again, I said this at the top of the show. I'm going to say it again. This guy is not Joe Salmanese. This is not the same organization that we were fighting all those years ago. It's not. Now, I'm not going to turn around and try and convince you that, oh, everything is forgiven and, you know, let's go back to being, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that because I think HRC has now, to their credit, put themselves on the firing line and said, watch, here's what we're going to do. Now watch us do it. And I think that's exactly what we need to do. I think we need to keep an eye on these folks. As Chad himself just said, we need to hold them accountable. And I'll tell you something else. And you can call me a Pollyanna if you want. I don't care. But I will tell you this. I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the words. But again, the words, they're words. What I'm really impressed with is what they've done so far. And granted, there's a lot more, as Chad acknowledged when we were talking. There's a lot more to do. There really is. But, I mean, here's the thing. For example, folks who they're hiring, I've met a few of them. I met Allison Van Kuyken, who is a field operative, a field person. I'm not sure exactly what her title is, but she's great. I met her at Netroots. She's awesome. I met Lou Weaver, who is on, I think, on their board. He is not actually an employee, but he is somebody who works with them, a trans guy. Awesome. And, of course, as we were talking about during the interview, Hayden Mora, who is now the deputy chief of staff. I mean, that's management. That's pretty high up there. And you know what? He's got the skills. That's the thing, okay? Because I don't know about you. I was on Facebook earlier today talking to folks, and some of them actually said to me, you know, when are we going to see some folks promoted into management? When are we going to see some diversity? When are we going to see, you know? And you know what? Yeah, they need to do a lot more. I mean, there's no question. There's no question. They need to do more. But when I see somebody, like Hayden Mora, who's got the skills, who knows his stuff, who's qualified, and they put him into a management position like that, that impresses me. The same thing with Allison. She's good. She's really good. Some of you may remember from back in the day, Jay Brown, who was with them back in the day. He's a good guy, okay? Even back in the day, back when we were still fighting them and they were still the enemy and all that stuff, and I had contact with Jay Brown, and we would trade emails and stuff. This was during the period when Donna Rose was on their executive board, and I'll tell you, I've seen Donna's comments on Facebook, and she's hopeful too, and I think that's where I am. I mean, I'm not willing to say, okay, this is great, this is wonderful, let's, you know, just pretend everything's great now. Because I don't believe that that's credible. I don't believe that HRC has earned that right to get the benefit of the doubt and just say, okay, we trust you now. No. There's too much history here for that. And I think Chad understands that. I think the other folks at HRC understand that. Trust has to be earned. You have to earn this. But I also believe that if this organization is setting out to say, you know what, we're going to do this. We're going to support trans people. We're going to mend old wounds. We're going to do the stuff we should have been doing 10, 15, 20 years ago. Well, you know what? They're doing it. What they're doing now, and granted, you know how this is. HRC is this monolithic organization. And it's like a giant cruise ship. When you make changes, when you want to make a course correction, it sometimes takes a little while to get, you know, everything all together, and those turns come a little slowly because these things take time to happen. And a lot of what HRC has been doing that's great, such as hiring people like Allison and Hayden and other folks, has been happening kind of under the radar a little bit. And you know, and that's one of the things, if I'm going to criticize HRC about anything right now, that's going to be it, is we need you guys to talk about this stuff, okay? How do you expect us to start trusting you unless you tell us what you're doing? So if there's any criticism I'm still willing to level at the Human Rights Campaign, that's it. And guess what? Well, you know what? They just sent their president to the largest transgender conference in the country to say, I'm sorry. We won't do it anymore. And watch what we're going to do now. So to me, I'll tell you what. To me, that's pretty ballsy. That takes guts. To go to that audience who you know, are going to be sitting there with their arms folded, going, oh, yeah? Prove it. And that's kind of where I am. I honestly am kind of in that position. Not with my arms crossed. I think, like I said, I'm encouraged by what I've seen. And I've gotten to interact with these people. And I've gotten to get a little taste of what's going on. And so I'm encouraged. I'm hopeful. But you know what? I still want to see them prove it. I am not convinced. I am encouraged. I am hopeful. Convincing, that's going to take a little bit more. And I think we're all entitled to a bit of skepticism here. In fact, I think we're all entitled to a lot of skepticism here. And you know what? It's fair, because they know it too. And that's the thing about the Human Rights Campaign. We have to remember, these guys, whether we are comfortable with the idea or not, they're the big dog. They're the people who can pick up the phone and get the senator on the phone. They're the folks who can go up to Capitol Hill and help determine what legislation winds up getting a vote and what doesn't. Let's not forget that. That as much as we have had problems when HRC has worked against us and has caused problems, consider the flip side of that, where if HRC is an HRC that is on our side, that is genuinely saying we are the champions of not only gays and lesbians and bisexuals, but also transgender people, and we will not let these folks walk alone. We will not accept a non-inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act or a non-inclusive omnibus bill or a non-inclusive anything. If you flip the script and you say, okay, let's say that everything that Chad Griffin just said, everything he said in that speech, everything he just said on the show tonight, let's assume for a moment that every word was absolutely 100% true. And I hope it is, but we're not there yet. Let's create that scenario for a moment. That's a lot of good stuff. That's progress. Don't forget, we're talking about an organization with a huge budget that probably has a bigger budget than probably all the LGBT organizations half the country. maybe even more. I mean, these guys have the juice. And somebody, well, so an organization like that, that has done so much harm in the past, can do an equivalent amount of good in the future if they use that power, that influence, that money, that manpower, all that stuff that we complained about for years. If it's all of a sudden they're turning around, they're saying, no, we're not playing that game anymore. We're going to do this correctly, the way we should have been doing it a generation ago. We're going to be the advocacy organization, the trans champion, the trans advocates that we said we were going to be 20 years ago. An organization like that, that really has our back, think about that. Think about how much progress we can make with them genuinely on our side, with them genuinely having the trans communities back. I don't know about you, but I think that's worth fighting for. I think it's worth fighting for, because I'll tell you something else. I'd much rather fight for something than a fight against it. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you rather get these people behind us than have to work around them, than have to fight them, than have to call them out? And you guys know, if you've followed my work for any length of time, okay, I've been calling these people out for decades. Literally, I mean, how scary is that? Okay, well, about a decade and a half or so, maybe a little bit more. I mean, we were fighting the Human Rights Campaign when I came out in 1997. It was just what it was. And now here we are, okay, it's 17 years later. And suddenly, we don't have to fight them anymore. Maybe we can take that, all that energy and all that effort that we put into working around these people, and instead we can use it to get the job done. And instead of having to say, how do we work around the Human Rights Campaign? How do we counter the Human Rights Campaign? Wouldn't it be great if we could say, let's give HRC a call and see if they can help fund this thing, or provide support or some media attention or some boots on the ground or whatever, whatever the situation calls for. Isn't that worth fighting for? Isn't that useful? I mean, because no matter what, let's not forget that despite all the history, despite everything that has gone on over the last 33 years or so that this organization has been in existence, and let's be frank, the transgender community really did not exist when these folks first formed HRC in 1980. It really just didn't exist. So, why don't we see if the history, we can get past, just like we can get past our history of bigotry, and let's be honest, we have a country, we live in a country with a history of discrimination, and bigotry is an integral part of our history, and we're embarrassed by it, and we're ashamed by it. And we've learned from it, and we don't do it anymore. Okay, sure, is there bigotry against folks? Of course, bigotry hasn't been conquered. But the culture has changed. If you think about it, think about where we were in, let's say, just to use the as a base, 1997. Think about where we were. There was no transgender media. There was no such thing. There was me and my keyboard. I mean, really. I mean, there was Gwen Smith. It was about it. And gender talk. I mean, there was nothing. Now, we're on the cover of Time magazine. I mean, come on. You see, that's the thing. I think, and for those who say, and I've heard this I've heard all week, as and I want to address this. I've heard all week everybody saying, oh, you know, this is another illusion of inclusion thing, you know, how they just scam it away, and this is just another way of HRC playing their game. Well, why do we assume that? Here's the thing. Think of it, if you want to think of it as, and I guess it's fair to say, well, what does HRC get out of this? Why is this something that HRC is motivated to do? Well, think about it. Think about it, my friends. We now live in a country where Janet Mock is a best-selling author, Laverne Cox is on the cover of Time, I'm writing for The Advocate. Okay, I mean, the world has changed. The world has changed. And what has happened in a lot of cases here is that we have, over the last generation or so, maybe even, well, certainly the last 10 years, the new activists who have come up in our community and who have become allies, who have come into activism over this last decade, let's say, have come up being raised and nurtured on the idea that the human rights campaign cannot be trusted. And you know what? That is impacting things, because you know this. I don't have to tell you guys this. You read the news. There's a lot of cases where HRC has tried to donate money to certain organizations, and they refuse because they don't want to take their money. I will tell you, back in 2006, when I was with the Gender Rights Advocacy Association of New Jersey, and we were fighting for the transgender civil rights law, in other words, what it really was wasn't actually a transgender civil rights law. It was an addition to the already existing law against discrimination that covered gays and lesbians and all the other standard categories that was already in effect. Now, I should point out that at the time, gays and lesbians, I think, had been protected in New Jersey for something like 18 years or something ridiculous like that. But in any case, okay, this was the battle that was going on at that time. And so, you know, it was, oh God, I, you know, I forgot where I was going with this. But I remember where I was going with this. Yes, it's been a long day. I'm sorry. I've been working very hard today, and I kind of. But in any case, I was working for ostensibly, I mean, it was really more of a title than an actual job, but ostensibly, I was the communications director for the Gender Rights Advocacy Association of New Jersey. And we got, HRC donated a check to our cause, to the transgender rights thing. I think, I don't remember how much it was, $3,000 or $5,000 or something like that. And we took a vote. Now, bear in mind, this is a tiny little organization. I think at the most we had like maybe 8-10 people, something like that. I mean, there's not a lot of people here. But we took a vote. And guess what? We voted to send their money back. We voted, none of us in the room felt comfortable taking HRC's money. Now, again, 8 years ago. That's still happening now, because the folks who have been raised in that culture, who have come up through LGBT activism over the last 10, 15 years, have been raised and indoctrinated, I don't know if that's the right word, but have been basically educated that HRC cannot be trusted. And so what's happened is the new organizations and the new leaderships of these organizations have said, well, okay, we can't trust HRC, so let's just work around them. And that's what people have been doing, is people have been just saying, forget it. We'll do this ourselves, because we don't want HRC coming in here and taking over. We don't want to take their money, and we don't want them, because we don't like them and we don't trust them. And none of the people who we work with like them or trust them. And HRC knows that. And they want to work with these organizations, and they want to unite the community. And it's a good goal, and it's a valid goal, and it's the kind of goal that will make our own efforts more effective. Seriously. These folks are coming to us. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody last night, somebody who's not a trans person or a gay person even. And I was describing the situation to them, and they said something that really kind of knocked me back a step. They said, you know what that sounds like, Becky? It sounds like the abusive boyfriend who hits his girlfriend coming back on his knees in front of his girlfriend and begging to come back home and promising not to do it anymore. Well, of course, we know, this has happened before, where HRC has said, oh, no, you can trust us this time. And then we found out later on, well, we couldn't. But again, when I've seen this time, is very different than what I saw in 2006, 2008, 2009. It's very different. Now they're saying, we don't expect you to trust us, but we want you to pay attention. Watch what we do now. Here's what we're going to do. Hold us accountable. That impresses me. I have not heard that from the Human Rights Campaign before, ever. Not in 17 and a half years that I have been out as a trans woman in this community have I ever heard HRC say the words, hold us accountable. And I think we should. I think that's exactly what we need to do. And I think HRC, for their part, they're putting in the right people. What I would like to see now is, and we didn't really get into this with Chad because, of course, we had a lot of ground to cover and there was limited time and all that. But I would like to see, for example, I'd like to see HRC go into New York. I would like to see them use their money, their media power, their influence, and their connections with legislators to basically, you know, get Governor Cuomo off his ass. You know, if you listen to the show, I rant about that guy all the time because I think he's a sellout. I do. Here's a guy, again, this guy, he was all about gay marriage. But then with the transgender rights bill, he couldn't be bothered. And then when ESPA, when the Empire State Pride Agenda, calls him out on it, to their credit, and they don't get much from me, but they'll get credit for at least that, he says, oh, well, if you reelect me, then I'll support the transgender rights bill. In other words, this guy is a real retail politician. Pay me first. Give me money first. Vote for me first. And then I'll give you what you want. Well, you know what? Trans folks in New York are not going to be able to change that narrative. But maybe the largest LGBT civil rights organization in the country, and the wealthiest, and the one with the most political influence, maybe they can make a dent here. If they could do all the damage to transgender inclusion that they did over the years, let's see what happens when they flip that script and start insisting on transgender inclusion and saying things like to politicians, you want our money? You want our support? You want our endorsement? You want our people supporting your candidacy? Then you do what we tell you. Because these people need civil rights. And no, it doesn't stop at marriage. And if you don't give us that, we're not going to say, oh, okay, well, we'll just give you money anyway. No. Because that's not what an advocate does. An advocate does not walk away. An advocate says, if you don't give me what I want, I will be back tomorrow. And the next day, and the next day. And if you won't give me what I want, then guess what? I'm going to be supporting somebody who will. That's what I want to see. I want to see HRC take a leadership role, pro-trans leadership role on the political arena, the same way that they did when we were fighting against them. If they can change the narrative on Capitol Hill in 2006 and 2007, then surely they can change the narrative again. Maybe not in the House right now with John Boehner in charge. But you know what? I bet you they can do some stuff in New York. I bet you they can help in New Hampshire. I bet you they can make a dent in Wisconsin. That's what I want to see, most of all. I mean, granted, everything else that I heard tonight, that we heard tonight, is very encouraging. Obviously, we have to see what happens. We got to see what this looks like. I'm sure you noticed I asked Chad a lot of questions like that. What does this look like? What are we going to see from you? And he, you know, the truth is he couldn't get real specific because, well, a lot of these things are new. And he doesn't know the details of every single program that HRC does. But I'll tell you what, I listened to this guy speak. I hear his enthusiasm, and I hear the credibility. I know I use that word advisedly because I don't know this guy. The only way I've met him is over the phone just now, okay? I don't know this man. I've never met him. So I can't say, oh, we can trust him or we can't. I don't know the guy. But what I do know is I know the people that they are hiring, and they're good. Okay, these are the kind of people who I have no doubt, if we were talking 10 years ago, they'd have been right out there in front of the HRC headquarters holding signs right out there with us. Okay, but you know what? They're really good at what they do. Okay, I've seen it. I've seen it with my own eyes. They didn't just pick, as some people like to say, tokens. These are not tokens. These are activists. These are people who know how to do the work. These are people who have been doing the work. Okay, Hayden Mora, for example, was with SEIU for a long time. This guy has a great record. There's a reason they appointed him to deputy chief of staff, because he's qualified. Okay, and isn't that what we've been screaming about for years? I mean, I heard a trans woman today, who I greatly respect, saying exactly the same thing. What about all the trans folks who were out there on those sidewalks and fighting that HRC never even took a look at 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago even? Well, guess what? They're looking now. Not only are they looking, they're hiring. And they're putting them into positions of power. That impresses me. Is it enough? Not hardly. No. I want to see some more trans people on that executive board. That'll impress me. I want to see more trans people in management. I want to see more trans field directors and field people that they send out to various efforts, like people like Allison, for example. I want to see more of that. I want to see these programs that Chad was talking about turned into action. That's why I said to him before I let him go, I want you to come back and give us a report. Because this is not over. This is just getting started. Okay? What we saw, what we heard, that speech earlier today, that was the opening bell. That was not the finish. That was the beginning. Okay? This is a moment when I think HRC can and should have our ears. And where we, each of us, every single one of us, should say, oh yeah, prove it. And I think they will. Because I think they're motivated. When you fight against these people and you're so against, and I remarked this actually to somebody recently, and I said, you know, when you've been involved with this fight on one side for as long and as intimately as I have, you finally start to notice, hey, you know what? We're winning. Yes. Yes. Boys, girls, everyone else, we are winning. And this, my friends, is what winning looks like. This is what it looks like when we win. And we have, you know, we shouldn't be poor winners, okay? We fought this organization for decades and we won. They're doing it. Now, follow through is yet to be seen. But I'll tell you what, and I said this earlier, I'll say it again. If this is an organization that is genuinely looking to change their ways and support trans people and support the trans community and do all those things that they were promising us years and years and years ago and really weren't interested in doing, they were just saying it because that's what was politically correct at the time. If they're serious about this, if they're really serious about changing the narrative and changing the way that they do things, so far, as far as I can see, they're doing it all the right way. They're doing everything that we need to see from them, that we would want to see from a human rights campaign that genuinely supports the trans community. They're doing it. So, again, there is no reason we should take anything on faith. There is no reason we should trust. There is no reason we should assume. There is no reason we shouldn't keep our eyes open and paying attention. But I do think, at the very least, we need to keep an open mind, because the rewards of a truly, fully inclusive and supportive human rights campaign are too great not to fight for, not to take the opportunity when they come to us and say, we want to help. We're ready to help. It's time. We are ready. We're done being assholes. It's time to be friends. Can't we at least shake hands and say, okay, show us. What are you going to do now? Yeah, pull out that wallet. Yeah, that one. Okay, yeah, the big fat one. The one with all that money in there, and start spending it. And you know that big pile of political capital that you got saved up? We want some of that too. Yeah. And you know how, and this is just a stuff I'm making up, but you know what I want to see? You know what I want to see? I want to see the kind of effort on trans rights and the kind of enthusiasm on trans rights and the kind of money spent on trans rights that we see on marriage. And I'm not saying we should see it instead of marriage, because that's ridiculous. Marriage is an important issue. And it's an important issue for trans people as well as it is for gays, lesbians, and bi folks. Think about it. Okay, just to give you an example. Okay, you know what always frustrates me about organizations and activists when they talk about marriage, and this has made me nuts for years and years, and I call it out all the time. When somebody comes out in a state like New York and says, oh, we have marriage equality here. No, you don't. Trans people have no rights. So any marriage in New York that involves a trans person is inherently unequal. I'm sorry, that is not marriage equality. That is special marriage rights for gays and lesbians only. Because you can't have a real marriage without the right to work, without the right to public accommodations, without the right to health care, without the right to education, without the right to access government services, without all that stuff. You don't have a real marriage. And in New York, if you are a transgender person, all of those things or can be legally denied you. That is not equality. And so when these folks throw around marriage equality in states like New York and New Hampshire and Massachusetts, I'm sorry, no sale here. equality means equality. Like, you know, like they say, no means no. Equal means equal. And you can't tell me that it's equality to say, well, all these people over here have full civil rights except you, so therefore we have equality. That's not equality. That's not equality. That is people, most of the people getting to join the oppressor class at your expense. That is not equality. And that is one of the things that has made me nuts about activism in our community for years. So that's what I want to see. I want to see, you want to impress me? Make the investment. Show us. Let's see those full color ads. Let's see those media blitzes. Let's see Chad, for example, not only come on my show, let's see him go talk trans rights on MSNBC or CNN or hell, even Fox, God help us. They talk about us more than the rest of them anyway. I mean, that's what I want to see. I want to see a full court press on transgender rights. And I think we deserve it. And you know what? I think HRC owes it to us. Yes, owes it. Okay, there's been a lot of talk. There's been a lot of talk. And I know a lot of you who follow Facebook have heard people say this. Reparations. We deserve reparations. Well, you know, I'm sorry, but the Human Rights Campaign is not a country. You don't pay reparations. You know what kind of reparations I want to see? I want to see that. I want to see, you said, well, we fucked you over at the expense of marriage for years and years and years. Now, we are going to treat your civil rights on a par with our own. That our pet issue is going to be no more or less important than your pet issue. That marriage, for example, is going to be no more or less a priority for the Human Rights Campaign than the Employment Non-Discrimination Act or this omnibus bill or a state rights battle for marriage versus employment rights. The equal means equal. And when we say, when Chad Griffin says to us, hold us accountable, that's what I want to hold him accountable for. Treat us, HRC, like our rights are no less important than your own. That's how you impress me. I want this to happen. I will tell you the truth. I will be blatantly honest with you, and you can call me a sellout if you want. I don't care. I want them to succeed. I want them to do this. I want them to win us over. I want to be convinced. I want to be, because the benefit of a fully inclusive and supportive HRC is too important not to try for, not to work towards. I just don't believe that there is any reason not to give HRC the opportunity. You know, it's funny. When I was at Netroots, there was one of the HRC folks who I actually got into a bit of an argument with one night. We were sitting around a table with a bunch of folks, and we were talking about HRC, and we got into a discussion, and, you know, I was trying to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, you guys are telling me you're doing all this great stuff, but, you know, there's a history here, and I'm sorry, but I'm not ready to just take it on faith that this is happening. And this person got a little upset and said, you know, you're living in the past, Becky, and we got into a little, almost a shouting match, really. But, you know, that's the thing. I'm sorry. I am not going to take anything on faith from these people. I just will not. You have to convince me. You got to earn it. You have to earn it. I'm sorry. Why? Because of the history. because you don't get the right to the benefit of the doubt like some other organization that didn't spend 30 years fucking us over. You don't get that benefit of the doubt anymore. I'm sorry. You just don't. You just don't. And I think that Chad and the Human Rights Campaign, and I know because I've talked to several folks who work there, they're aware of this. They're not fools. They know the history. They know it. And they know they're going to have to earn this. And they know it's going to have to be, you know, they're going to have to convince people. And again, I am impressed. I am not convinced. But I could be. I hope to be. But I'm not there yet. I've heard a lot of stuff. And you know, the truth is, I've read the speech, obviously. I think that all these things that Chad was saying make a lot of sense. And I think this was a very well thought out speech. It was humble. It was honest. It reached out in a way that, frankly, I don't imagine that the HRC of 2 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, I don't think that speech would ever be made. Okay? Let's not factor in Salmanis. Okay? Salmanis. There was one of two things that happened with Joe Salmanis, and we still don't know which one it was. And you know what? We may never know. But one of two things happened with Joe Salmanis. Either he went to Southern Comfort in 2007 and lied his ass off, knowing full well that what he was telling the community was a lie. Or he said what he believed, and he made an honest promise. It was heartfelt and honest at the time he said it. And then he went back to Washington, HRC executive board said, well, we're not doing that, sorry. One of those two things had to happen. And that was one of the reasons why I asked Chad right up front, if, you know, what do we do? How can we be sure that the executive board is not just going to turn around and say, well, you know, we've decided to not do this because, well, we've just decided we're not doing it. And, you know, the fact that Chad says that the board is behind him on this, you know what? I'll tell you the truth. I believe him on that. I believe that everything he said, absolutely, that he believes and that was heartfelt, and I don't question his honesty. What I still have questions about is the follow-through. Okay, you said it, and I believe that you meant it when you said it, and I believe that HRC's board, because let's be honest, a lot of these folks were around back in those days, and they see the writing on the wall. They're not idiots. They know. They know. It's like you guys either get with the program or get left behind. And they took so long to do it because being the monolith that they are, HRC takes so long to get with the program that they're finally starting to realize, you know what? We better get our shit together or we're going to get left behind. Because that's exactly what's been happening, is they're getting left behind, is folks are saying, you know what? We don't want your money. Leave us alone. We don't like you. We don't trust you. Go away. Well, what kind of advocacy organization can maintain a credible reputation? And you know what the truth is? I think it's hurting them politically, too. Because don't forget, Congress people don't just talk to each other. They don't just talk to their staff, and they don't just talk to the lobbyists that happen to walk into their offices. You also talk to the people back home. And when they go and they say, hey, isn't it great that I talked to the Human Rights Campaign and they're doing this program? And I bet you there's a lot of people, constituents of these folks, who are saying, oh, you're supporting the Human Rights Campaign? Oh, gee, I don't think I'll be volunteering for you this year. sorry, my donation will be staying in my pocket this year because I don't like that association. I don't trust them, so now I don't trust you either. And I would bet you, if that happens often enough, guess what? HRC's credibility on the Hill and in state legislatures starts to take a hit. And they're not fools. You know, part of it is, a lot of it is the altruism and saying this is the right thing to do. But also, and I've talked about this on the show at other times, HRC, the first goal of any organization is to survive. And I think HRC has finally seen the writing on the wall. I think they finally come to the conclusion that if we don't do this, if we don't evolve with the rest of the community, if we don't go to where the community is today, then we are going to be left standing on the corner while everybody else is progressing forward. And I think that's what's been happening very quickly, is there's less and less people who are willing to pay attention. There are less and less people who are willing to take HRC seriously. There is less and less influence that they're able to have when they know that their own constituents are not on board with this organization. And you know something else? I think they started to realize that. If those of you who remember what happened last year with the transgender pride flag, we covered it here on the show. Brian Ellicott, young trans man, was on a stage during in front of the Supreme Court during right when the marriage Windsor decision was coming down, and they had this field director, Karen Quimby, who's, you know, that's the field director, I believe, is lower middle management. I'm not exactly sure how the hierarchy works there, but somewhere lower middle management, somewhere. And she said she wanted him to take the flag down. And he protested. She said, well, marriage is not a transgender issue. Remember this? Well, boy, you know, I remember this whole thing. They got called out for it so fast, and all the old animosities, all the old wounds just opened up, and all that vitriol, all that pent-up rage towards the human rights campaign that people had just been saving up because there wasn't anything to protest at the moment, it all came right back, and people were ready to shred them. And I remember, and I was one of the people who was doing this. I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post about this. Everybody was ready to say, see, nothing's changed. They're the same way they always were. It's the same bullshit. They don't get it. They don't train their people, you know, and they don't give a shit about anybody but gays and lesbians. And that argument has a lot of traction in our community. And not just for trans folks, trans folks and allies. Because let's be honest, okay, if you're talking 17 years ago, how many gay and lesbian organizations actually were actively inclusive of transgender people back then? Not a whole lot. I mean, sure, they were friendly, but that's not the same as saying we include you. You're part of who we advocate for. It was rarer. Now, it's tough to find organizations that are not inclusive. And I think big part of the problem for the human rights campaign is they are seen as not inclusive. And so all these inclusive organizations say, you know what, we don't want to work with you because we support trans folks. And we don't want you here because of the history, because we have no reason to believe that you're going to support our transgender members, that you're just here to fight for gays and lesbians. Because that's what they always did. Because that's how they behaved. Because that's the reputation they got. Because they earned it. And so I think that incident really galvanized things. Because for me, from my perspective, that was where HRC finally started to do stuff. I think that was you know, I hate to use Christian religious terms because I'm not a Christian, but it was like their come to Jesus moment. Do you know what I mean? Where they say, oh, shit, we better do something about this because, you know, I mean, really, I think that was the moment when they started to realize, you know, we better get shit or get off the pot, because if we don't do something, we don't become trans inclusive, nobody's going to pay attention to us anymore. I really believe that. And that's one of the reasons why when Chad says that the HRC board, the board of directors, is on board with this, I can believe it. Now, do I know this? No, I don't know. I mean, I know of a few names of people that are on the board, but I don't know where they each member is, and I wouldn't know such a thing because these things are private. But I do think that most of these folks have common sense. And they wouldn't be on the board of the Human Rights Campaign unless they wanted to win, unless they wanted to succeed. And I think they realize that if you want to win, if you want to succeed, you got to be trans inclusive. Because if not, most of the people that you want to work with, that you want to depend on, we're not going to want anything to do with you. Again, Laverne Cox on the cover of Time magazine. Janet Mock, New York Times best-selling author. Me, working for their fucking advocate. I mean, who would have thought that? When I came out, not in a million years would I have thought that I would write for the advocate. Because the advocate was one of those places where they would, if they even discussed us, it was usually negative. I mean, not in a million years would I have believed that today I would be writing for the advocate. And yet here I am. People change, organizations change, culture changes. The country changes. The hateful bigots tend to be older and they die off. Younger kids are coming into this movement. They don't come in with these bigotries. I mean, I look and I have a little sister who's 20 years old and she's a cosplayer. And what that is cosplay is costume play. In other words, they dress up as cartoon characters, they dress up as superheroes, they dress up as comic book characters and anime characters and all these different things. She plays as many male characters as female characters. These kids gender is not as big a deal for the younger kids, for the younger generation, as it was for us. You know, it just isn't. And I think, again, HRC is seeing the writing on the wall. And as these kids come into the movement, and as the older, less inclusive-minded folks drop out of the movement and retire or pass away or whatever, as that process goes on and on and on, all over, not just at HRC, but all over the country, in every civil rights organization, and in our culture, it's like HRC is like this rock in the middle of the stream that doesn't move, while everything else is moving around it and shooting towards the future, and everything is being carried way fast towards the future, and then HRC is just this has been this huge rock right in the middle of the stream. That no matter what happens, no matter how much force, everything goes past it, and no matter how many times they crash, stuff crashes into them because they won't get out of the way and they won't move forward with the tide. They just sit there and they don't move, but everything else does. And we don't look back. And I think that's what's happening here, is just like our culture. Just like our community, just like the laws that we live under, HRC finally is evolving. And isn't that what we always wanted? Really? I mean, for those of you who have been around a while, for those of you who are on the front lines with us, isn't that what it's all about? Isn't that what activism is all about? Not wanting to punish people for doing the wrong thing, but leading people into doing the right thing. I mean, isn't that really what activism is truly about? I don't want to punish HRC for stuff that happened years ago. I'd rather work with them because that's what benefits my community. Having HRC on my side is of more value to me than fighting against them. That's the way I look at it. And truthfully, think about this to yourself. What has HRC done in the last year since that flag incident? And I'm not counting that because for me, that was a benchmark. So I'm talking about from the flag incident forward. What has HRC done that's pissed you off? Think about it. Anything? What have they done over the last year? Have they advocated for anything you don't like? Well, as close as I can come to that is that they're still in support of ENDA with the religious exemption, which a lot of folks are having some issues with. Understandably. But they're still in support of a fully inclusive ENDA. Now, we can argue about the religious exemption. We can say, yes, it should belong, no, it shouldn't. Yes, we should support it, no, we shouldn't. We can have that conversation, and that's a conversation we should have. We should have that conversation. But don't we want to fight for something instead of against it? That's what I'm saying. And again, I know I sound like I'm repeating myself over and over, but I'm going to keep saying this because it's the truth. And because I have not been convinced of anything other than I want to see what happens next. I want to see what they do now. You want us to take you back? You know, we're like the battered girlfriend. You want us to take us back? Where's those flowers? Show us some flowers. I want candy, too. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? You know, it's... I think we have to do this. I think we have to put the animosity, the automatic refusal to accept anything they say as possible, not factual, but possible. I think we need to put that on the shelf for a while and say, all right, HRC, so you say you're going to do this, and you say you're going to do that, and you say you're going to do the other thing. Let's see. And again, that was a big reason why I said to Chad before he left, I want you to come back. I want you to talk to us again. I want you to keep us updated on what's going on and what you guys are doing. Because again, we have nothing to prove. We have nothing to, you know, as HRC said, hold us accountable. They have to prove to us that they're trustworthy and a real advocate. We don't have to prove anything. We do not owe this organization shit. They owe us. And they know it. And you know, that's the thing. If these guys are for real, if these folks are for real, well, now we get to find out. Right now. Right now. This is when we get to find out. Because, okay, you know how we say put up or shut up? Well, they just put up. Let's see. They just gave us a long list of things they're going to do. The Chad Griffin fell on his sword on behalf of the HRC. Okay, well, that's great. I'm very encouraged. I have not heard this kind of an apology or these kind of an effort. I'm encouraged. I really am. And if there's some way that I can assist in that, sure, why not? Why not? The fact that I was able to go to HRC and I'll give a special shout out to HRC's Vice President of Communications, Fred Sains, who was absolutely the guy who made this happen, this interview happen. So, but they did it. You know, I mean, you know how many times I tried to get an interview with Salmanis or Cheryl Jakes or one of these people? Never. I would get emails from, like, I don't know how many of you remember Brad Luna back in the day when he was a communications director over there. And I was going to get these, like, two-sentence emails from him. Yeah, we're really not interested. Goodbye. You know, I mean, that was basically what it was. They just didn't give a shit. They weren't interested. No, we're not doing it because, well, we're not doing it. Salmanis flatly refused. Absolutely hated me. Hated me. Because I used to call him out on the Bellerico Project all the time. Well, because he kept giving us reasons to call him out all the time. You know, and I used to say back in the day, it's like, you don't want us to call you bad things and you don't want us to say bad things about you? Stop giving me all this ammunition. Well, guess what? They stopped giving us ammunition. I haven't had something significant to complain about the Human Rights Campaign since that flag incident. And I'll tell you something else. I gave it to them, but good, after that issue. Because I published an article for the Huffington Post that I wrote. And the name of the title of that article was, "Even After All These Years, HRC Still Doesn't Get It." Maybe they get it now. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe they do get it now. Because if they didn't get it, would they hire somebody like Hayden Mora? Would they hire someone like Allison Van Kuyken? Would they be doing all that they're doing? Would they be sending their president to Southern Comfort to talk to trans folks? Knowing the history and knowing that if they said something that they weren't going to follow through on, that they had no real intention of following through on, that it wouldn't cost them. I mean, look at how they got shredded. And I mean shredded over that flag thing. Can you imagine if they were to have gone and done a Salmanis and had sent Chad Griffin off there and then just found out, and we found out later, for example, it was all bullshit? They're done. They're done. I mean, it would be, I mean, you know, this is no longer, you know, I mean, people like me are working in the media now. You know what I mean? People like Mitch Calloway are in the media now. We're not going to let them get away with that. And we have the media reach to hold them accountable now. And they know it. That's the thing. They did it back in the day. Why? Because they knew that everybody was listening to them and nobody was listening to us. Guess what? Surprise! And you know what? I don't want to make light of this because it's the truth. HRC, just like any other entity, has to evolve. It's evolve or die. You know, I mean, literally, they don't want to be thought of as the John Birch Society of LGBTs, you know, the Mattachine Society. They don't want to be seen that way. They want to be a cutting-edge civil rights organization. And they should be a cutting-edge civil rights organization because they are among the most capable of handling that role. But in order to be a cutting-edge civil rights organization in 2014, you have to be supportive of trans people and the issues that matter in our lives. Marriage alone is not going to save this organization. And they know it. Because you know what? Marriage is old news now. This is not headline news anymore. Oh, great. Gay people can get married in another state. Oh, how exciting. Oh, excuse me. I think I'll go to bed now. Yeah. Oh, great. Gay marriage. Rah. I mean, seriously. You know, this is not that big a deal anymore. What's the big deal? Laverne Cox is a big deal. Janet Mock is a big deal. You know, all the stuff, the energy, the cultural energy, that's all about us now. Doesn't it feel good to have people paying attention for a change? I know it does to me. Well, I'm a journalist, so of course, you know, I mean, I want my work to get attention. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, you know, hello, I'm in front of a microphone talking to you now. Am I seeking attention? Yes. Yes, I am. And I would imagine so are you. And the reason, the biggest motivator is because 5, 10, 15 years ago, we weren't getting it. Now, you can't find a civil rights organization, an LGBT civil rights organization, that isn't LGB or T, and T. I mean, and that's what HRC has finally realized, that they don't operate in a vacuum. They can no longer just play their own game and say, this is what we're doing, and if you don't like it, too bad. Because people have said, you know what, we don't like what you're doing, and we're not going to play. We're not just going to line up behind you because you've got the biggest wallet and the biggest megaphone. We're just not going to do it. We're going to say, fuck you, take your money, and we're going to go do what we're going to do. Because people are starting to say, you know what, no, this isn't an option. Transgender inclusion is not an option. It's a principle. It's a core value. It is part of who we are as a community, and you cannot be a credible representative of this community unless you are with the program. And again, HRC is this monolithic organization, and they're slow moving. These things take time. But they did it. And again, my only criticism for HRC over the last year is, and I've said this to HRC folks repeatedly, is where the hell have you been hiding all this stuff? You go out and you're doing all these great things, things that the community should know about, things that are beneficial to the community, hiring people who are great, who will represent our community well, and you're not telling anybody. What the heck is wrong with you people? How on earth do you expect to change hearts and minds if you don't come out of your bubble and tell people what you're doing? Well, I think, you know what I think? I think they finally decided it's time to break the bubble. Seriously. I don't think this is just all altruistic. I think they are concerned because I think they realize that, you know what? We're behind the curve. The community has moved on. And if we want to be on the cutting edge, we have to come to where the community is. The community is not going to come to where we are. The community has passed us by. It's we, HRC, who have to catch up with where everybody else is now. I think they're realizing that. And I think they've come to understand that. And they are taking the steps that they need to take in order to accomplish that goal. And that's what I am seeing. And that, more than anything else, is what excites me and what makes me hopeful, is that they are moving. And they are saying, no, you don't have to come to us. We are coming to you. That is new. That is new. HRC is not playing the same do what we say or we're going to take our ball and go home games. They are saying, no, you do not have to come to us. We will come to you. And more than anything else, more than any other single factor in all of this that gives me hope is that we are winning. They are coming to us to beg our forgiveness and to pledge their support. Isn't that exactly what we need? Isn't that what we should be willing to say? And I'm not saying, okay, nobody's willing to say, oh, okay, all is forgiven, HRC. Come on back to the fold. That's not going to happen. But shouldn't we at least respect the fact that they're trying? And shouldn't we respect the fact that they're taking concrete, verifiable steps and saying to them and saying to us, don't take anything on faith. Hold us accountable. We are making you this series of promises, and we want you to hold us to it. That impresses me, because that part of it is new. That is not the HRC we were fighting 2 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It's not. That is very different. The HRC of those days didn't give a shit. The only people they cared about impressing were the ones who work on Capitol Hill. Now they're saying, we want to impress you. Watch us. Watch what we do now. I mean, isn't this the goal? We're winning. This battle has been going on since I came out. In fact, much longer than I came out, since before I came out 17 years ago. We're winning. We have won. Is it over? Who knows? That chapter of the story has yet to be written. But you know what? If we weren't winning, we wouldn't have the president of the Human Rights Campaign coming to us and saying what he said at Southern Comfort today. And what he just said on the show just a little while ago. Think about that. Because I'm telling you, that's important. It matters. It makes a difference. Things have changed a lot. We have evolved. Our community has evolved. Our country has evolved. Our culture has evolved. And so I don't really believe it's that far a stretch to say, well, maybe HRC is evolving too, as Chad said earlier. And I don't know about you, but I can't wait to see what happens next. Isn't this what we were fighting for all those years ago? Isn't this exactly this, why we were picking up those protest signs, why we were marching in front of the Human Rights Campaign, why we protested their galas, why we were in conflict with them for all those years. Isn't this exactly what we were hoping for HRC to say, okay, you're right. we're sorry, we won't do it anymore. I mean, isn't that exactly what we were striving for in those days? Isn't it? And so, when we're finally getting what we want, what we need, what we deserve from this organization, and they're saying, we're doing it now, and we're going to prove it to you, I say they deserve the chance. I say we owe them nothing except keeping an open mind and letting them, allowing ourselves to be convinced, not to trust, because that implies something else, but to say, as we said earlier, okay, convince me, prove it, show me why I should believe you're for real this time. And I think we have a lot of evidence that says that they are, in fact, for real. Hayden Mora, Allison Van Kuyken, all the other, the five other gender, I don't know, trans and gender variant folks, all these programs Chad was talking about. The apology, which I frankly was really surprised to hear. I kind of had a feeling that they were going to do that, but to the extent that we saw that? No, not really. I was impressed. I'm impressed with them. I'm impressed with Chad. I'm impressed with what they have been doing over the past year. I want this to work. I want HRC to have our back, and you should too. All want that. That should be the goal, because don't forget that at the end of the day, when all is said and done, regardless of our policy issues, regardless of our trust issues, regardless of anything else, we're still family. We have squabbles. We fight. We argue. Maybe even we throw a few plates here and there. But we're family. We're on the same side. We're fighting for the same thing. We have the same goals, ultimately. And isn't that what really matters? Because the truth is, we are family. And families have fights. Families are angry. Families have knockdown dragouts. Families argue and fight and complain and do all those things. But at the end of the day, they're still families. And at the end of the day, when the fight is over, when people have fought it out, when you've worked it out, when somebody finally says, okay, you win, we're still family. And we shake hands, we clap each other on the back, and we walk home together. Because that's what we do. That's what we do. And that's what I'm hoping that we're going to see. All right. We are done for tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show. Podcast will be up very shortly. As always, I want to say thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting this media. And we're going to catch you next week. Have a good night, everybody.
the people.